Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Welcome to a special edition of House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with Guinness. You won't be surprised to hear we have reached our summer recess. So while the boys are off sunning themselves, we thought we'd bring you a series of best of episodes looking back at a fairly chaotic last 9 months. Over the next hour or so, you'll hear from the likes of Nick Kennedy, Rob Vickerman, Billy Vunipola, Mike Tindall, and of course, Mr. James Haskell himself. And what better place to start than right back at episode one and what James's expectations were for the House of Rugby to come.
I think hopefully giving people a bit of an insight actually from the horse's mouth. It is like a horse's mouth. Obviously a lot of people have to put up with kind of pundits who haven't played for a long time. And I think it'd be nice to share some views and bits and pieces from the front line or near enough to the front line. Just give people a little bit of an insight to what it's like.
Are you still near the front line?
Hopefully, but after this podcast, probably be out the door. But then maybe I'll be able to do it all the time.
Unsurprisingly, that didn't last long.
Quick prediction, just for what it's worth, on Wales Scotland. Okay. Let's move on. I reckon you answer 1 in 10 of the questions I ask.
Yeah, because it's not a bad ratio. Listen, when we talked about setting up this show, we said we wanted to be informative, we wanted to be fun, but we did not want to be nosy. So much of your questions are absolutely nosy. If you want to go to nosy, go to that one where they sit in their bedroom with all the shirts around, chatting absolute rugby chat the whole time. We need a mix here.
We are the rugby show that by default doesn't talk much about rugby. But somehow, I hope you'll agree, it tends to work. When we started, we wanted to give people the chance to see James for what he really is, to tear down the curtain, so to speak.
I'm not smug.
Some might say otherwise.
I'm an idiot.
And guess what? That didn't last long either.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I've got a red phone in my house that went off. Apparently, viewing figures were rock bottom this week.
No, that's simply not true.
Apparently, Trimble's chat was horrific. I missed out on the fact that everyone got into tins about hating Ireland, which he does. I saw him burning a flag before I came in. And I'm just here to kind of save the day, get things back on track, bring a bit of energy. Because, you know, you're good, but your chat's not the best, and you're like little Lord Fauntleroy, and they need me in here bringing the energy, keeping him from causing massive offence.
More on tins offending the Irish later in the show. Meanwhile, James was still flip-flopping from arrogant to defensive and defensive to arrogant. So was he worried about getting things wrong on the show?
Oh, 100%.
Do you really?
Oh, I cannot tell
you. And do you enjoy that? I mean, do you like tiptoeing around the cliff edge?
I'll be honest with you, I always feel, after doing any kind of prolonged interview, or even after this, I feel a bit uneasy.
Do you?
Yeah.
What I said?
Yeah, all the time. Honestly, so I get my missus to listen to it.
Right.
And then she gives me the lowdown.
You want to thank the editors here in particular for keeping it.
No, I haven't said anything overly bad. I just think that... What are you talking about? I think that...
The offcuts, really.
I remember, week by week, Will Chignall years ago when we did a Sky offered us to do like media training.
Yeah.
And we honestly had a thing where he set up a full camera, lights. Yeah. He would film it. And he'd get like me, Tom Rees, or some of the other younger players. And he's always talking about stuff being left on the cutting room floor. And that always stood by me. And also, just answer the question you want, not the question they ask.
Yeah. Very true.
Do you remember when you leaked the story to the Daily Mail?
Do you remember that? No, this is the biggest stitch. I'm so glad you're
This is fact. This is not fact.
So we played in the Autumn International. So the Autumn International.
Just for the Ireland game.
No, it's for South Africa. South Africa, right. So I hadn't played in the first two games, right?
And bullied a bit.
Well, you said that, not me. Right, we got bullied a bit. And said Kendo, quote, 2018.
English arrogance again.
And playing against South Africa, and Jono had called me in on a Monday and said, listen, we're going to put you in the team this week, but don't say anything about the team. Right. Next day, Daily Mail, boom, the team's been released.
No, it was a double-page spread. Haskell comes in to beef up pack. Massive headline. The team hadn't been announced properly yet. And then Martin Johnson, in the morning just before training, whole team come in. He's got old-school flip chart. It's not even on a presenter thing, flips the team over, and then he starts going mad, saying, no one speak to that effing press. I cannot believe this has happened. And as he was looking at everyone there, he was whacking the ball, like, really aggressively. And he kept pointing at the number six, Haskell. Some C-bombers. He told the brother. He kept whacking the name. So we all saw he was like, literally pointing at Haskell, and we're all pissing ourselves laughing.
Honestly, he literally took me to one side and went, listen, Haskell, obviously, we wanted to keep the team under wraps. Did you tell anyone? I said, I swear on my life, I didn't. He goes,
did you maybe speak to your dad? And I was like, I mean, no, I haven't told him. He goes, right, if he told someone, it was literally getting ridiculous. He literally did not believe that it wasn't me, and subconsciously was underlining and reinforcing my name the entire time. So everyone was calling me the mole. And I didn't sell him out because I wouldn't have done it for free. So.
was it you?
No, 100%. I would never do that. I think it was every England side's always got leaked. I think I know exactly who it was because they don't get leaked anymore.
And you're not there anymore.
And I'm not there. No, I'm not naming names on it. I know it will send this rating through the roof.
You've had a bit of that, though, haven't you?
I will. I have done. I will say this. I'm always comfortable to say, I always want to be honest and genuine in what I believe in and say that to the extent that I'm able to, but also be comfortable that if I was to say it in front of my mum or say it to someone else, because, a lot of the stuff, once you know the whole picture, which a lot of fans, a lot of people on social media and kind of stuff don't have that perspective and don't understand, and a lot of journalists, they comment. And a lot of my favourite thing is ex-coaches and ex-players who have no idea about what's going on, literally no idea. And it's like me going to an Oasis concert, watching them play 10 times and thinking I can pick up a guitar and start singing and be able to comment on what they're doing. I mean, I could have a good guess because I can vaguely see what he's doing, but I couldn't give you any detail. What irritates me is people looking in from the outside saying, I think this is a problem, I think this is a problem, I think that's a problem, negativity. It's like, no, that's not correct. And I think as long as you're genuine and you're not offensive, but life now is you offend everyone doing anything. Everyone gets offended.
Everyone's waiting.
And as long as it's not overly controversial, you have to stick to your guns, you have to be honest. And that's what I try to do. But there is obviously more that you would like to reveal, but it just gives you more of a headache. But I think that it's important to have an opinion, to be honest, because otherwise you just get a load of robots. And I think if you understand that the media will either do you in the eye or support you, but it's cyclical, and you just stay genuine to yourself, that's the key.
Perhaps the most genuine thing that happened throughout the run was James's love for one man in particular.
Eddie Jones.
Yeah.
I think, they've all been so different.
Politicians are. Splinters from the fence.
You know I don't ever, ever sit on the fence with anything. Unless my career's in jeopardy, then I'll 100% sit on the fence. Also, very you need me to say. No, I think Jamie Joseph for the Highlanders was fantastic. Michael Checker at Stad when I was there was great. But they've all been so different. And I've had Ian McGeachan, I've had Warren, I've had Sean. I've never met a man more passionate than Sean Edwards for what he did. And Michael Checker was similar, because both those men, when they spoke about getting up and hitting people, you knew that if it kicked off, they'd be straight over there. Like, I remember Checker threw a cameraman down the stairs when we lost against...
And it was a £30,000 camera that went through through a window.
He was very passionate about what he did. There's nothing worse than someone who talk about beating someone up and put your body on the line and they've never made a tackle.
Yeah.
But when Sean says that and he like runs into you and was like hitting you in the head with a bag or whatever, or you give me a body shot, and Checker says, "Ask, you better get over that, or I'm going to fill you in." You'd be like, "Yes, sir.
Yes, okay." Boss. I saw one pre-game once where he lit like a beacon as well, and was walking around the changing room with putting fire into the faces of the players. We clipped it up and were then rung by the ARU, who said, "Please don't put that to air." So sorry for putting that one out there.
You've actually just mentioned it now.
Yeah, exactly. Who was your best coach?
Yeah, I'm going to go left field. So when I went to the Sevens from the Premiership, Ben Ryan was involved.
Yeah.
And he is possibly one of the strangest characters you'll meet. Been changed a little bit from Fiji, but he cites himself as being a short-sighted, left-handed ginger man from Brentford.
Yeah.
So straight away, he's not alpha. He is so far removed from alpha male. He used to have like 3-hour baths. Most
very
nights,
wise man. Very wise man.
Deep breath. But then in terms of the understanding of people, he got it. So he knew when to really wind people up, motivate them. He knew when to pull back. We used to have team meetings where he would come in slightly late, dive on the floor and give it the old, give you a punch as a kid. It's before a game. Or we'd be sat there one like before the New Zealand game, usually a big game against New Zealand, and be going, right, they're going to kick it a fair bit today. And you go, really? He went, no. In the middle of a team talk. And it's like a parody a little bit of David Brent. But in terms of being refreshing, in terms of understanding people, at that time, 2009, he was brilliant.
Ben Ryan, he used to coach St Edwards, and Wellington played St Edwards, and one of their props kneed me in the head. So I got up and punched him and tried to kill him, and I got red carded. And then obviously, like, it was a bit awkward because,
Team tease.
Yeah, exactly. You don't normally get red carded at school, so it was a bit of an affair. And then obviously imagine my shock later on when I found Ben coaching later on, because obviously I think we'd had a bit of a head-to-head, and I obviously had to apologise. Then he became obviously in the England set-up and bits and pieces. And I was like, thank God I apologised.
Yes, manners make us the man, James. You know that well.
Try and make you seem like you were tough throwing punches.
Prop need me in the head, so I had to take him down. Didn't teach you that in the CIA, did they? I've got no skills.
That was Hask and Rob Vickerman on their favourite coaches. And there's more of Ben Ryan next week as well. But for now, Here's more of the Haskell-Jones love-in, which, after a while, began to seem a little one way.
I think he's lost my number.
Really? Yeah. So you haven't heard from him?
I haven't heard from him, no.
But all lols aside, it was cute to see James discussing the England coach in such glowing terms, as it became more and more clear that he probably wouldn't get the chance to play for him again.
I truly believe of all my experiences with England, I've enjoyed the most under Eddie. You know, however lucky I've been to play for England, that the most important thing is not just getting a cap, it's doing something in a cap and winning silverware. Mm. And under Eddie, we've had the opportunity to win silverware. I think that he's great with the players. You know, he obviously pushes people hard and he sets a standard that some people can't live with. And I think that he's the right man for the job to take us up to the World Cup. And I think a lot of people who have opinions about, you know, him and what he does, they can't come up with solutions. You know, everyone wants to get rid of everyone, but no one ever comes up with a solution afterwards. And it's just, the good thing about rugby is it isn't football. There isn't that kind of quick fire assassinations. And I think Eddie, for me, as he always is, constantly thinking about improving himself, which a lot of people don't appreciate. You know, he's always going off and speaking to people, speaking to other coaches. I know he did something with Sir Alex Ferguson and a few bits and pieces.
He's always, Guardiola he's been to see as well.
And he's always trying to learn and improve himself and constantly look at the training model that the guys are using and the staff that he's got in camp. And I think, for me, his mindset will be wanting to put on a good performance, wanting to ultimately see those areas improvements. Attack, you know, there was question marks over that attack in South Africa for all the games, actually, apart from the third where they started unbelievably well and they came back in that kind of that third one and put the performance on. And they wanted to start fast. I think with John Mitchell defensively, he wants to wrap that up. He wants to use that as a real weapon. You know, Eddie analyses the game very completely and kind of knows, understands the difference between the broken play, the set piece, the unorganised, the unstructured and structured play. And he wants England to be at the top across the board, built behind a very good set piece. And I think the guys, if you look at the squad, he's picked a good combination of operators that will hopefully guarantee that good ball for some big, you know, back ball runners.
If that is not the perfect Eddie PR to get you back in the squad.
Obviously send it off to him. I'll show it to him on a presentation, PowerPoint. Eddie, here's the 10 reasons why I should be in the squad. No, I genuinely think, you know, in the past, and as a rugby player, as we all do, when you've got bosses and when you've got people, you often aren't able to say exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people in that life.
Did you not say once that he can go off like a volcano and you fear him and respect him in equal measure?
Yeah, I know. I said he's like an atomic bomb. I said, obviously, I met Eddie years and years ago when my contract was up with WAS, and I went when he was at Saracens. I had a chat with him, got to know him then. And obviously, I've met him over the years since. I played against Suntory when he was coaching, when I was playing for Rico in Japan. I've always really respected what he's done, but you always hear about him as a person. You know, he runs things with an iron fist.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he came into England camp, he was unbelievably friendly, really kind of empowering. And the one thing that Eddie does better than anyone, I find, with his players in particular, I can't speak about the staff, but the players, he understands what makes each player tick.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference between him and other coaches. He speaks to you on a level. He knows how to motivate you. He remembers little details about you. He's constantly trying to offer you advice, how to improve, encouraging you.
Yeah.
And that's important. I think a lot of times, especially in rugby, we focus so much on the negative about what players don't do, what players can't do. And for Eddie, I've always seen him seeing the positive in it, going, actually, you're really good at this. You're really good at that. This is what you need to do, mate. Don't think about anything else. Just do this.
What was your directive? Smash things.
Yeah, basically. And just carry hard. That was it. Yeah. Come on, mate, just hit that bloke really hard. Like, okay.
You're not great at catching.
Well, really I am, hard. Actually. I am. And there's a few highlight reels on YouTube that's probably available with this.
Have you edited those yourself?
No, I haven't, actually.
Eddie Jones, at the end of his post-match interview, was very quick to come and see you. It was a lovely smile, a lovely shot on screen. Relieved? Excited? What did you discuss? And B, how do you think he's feeling about life off the back of that?
Well, he's always got my P45 in his pocket, as he always says.
And you're always putting your business card into the other one.
Yeah, as soon as he shakes my hand, he always takes it back. There's a business card, James Haskell Enterprises. Yeah. Call me, it says.
But there's no brand.
There's no brand. It just says call me. No, but he's always like, I always feel like he's going to, here's your P45, mate. Each people right. Get out. But no, he was fine. He still liked the suit. You know, we just had just a brief chat and we always have a laugh. So it was, nothing amazing.
The England P45 also meant something else pretty drastic for James.
I haven't actually had too much feedback with the lads. I've kind of let them get on with it. I've spoken to
are you out of the WhatsApp group now?
Yeah, they throw you straight out.
Do they really?
Oh, it is unbelievable.
Savage.
Literally.
Ruthless.
Honestly, as soon as you're like back named in, it's like, welcome back. How is everyone?
Haskell,
and then, honestly, as soon as you're not picked, boom, dust.
Who's in charge of the keys to that?
Normally, I mean, normally the security were running that. And,
really?
Yeah, you were dusted, and you have the text group, nothing personal, but you're not in. It was honestly ruthless.
Double tap to the back of the head.
Yeah.
Out of the WhatsApp group then, but that hasn't slowed Hask down with another of his big bromances. Step forward, Billy Vunipola.
Give us a sort of a scale out of 10. How deep is the bromance between the two of you? Because you've had bromances in the England squad before, which are sort of burnt quite brightly and then burnt out.
Yeah.
But the two of you are...
Billy and mine, I think, has been constant. You know, I came in, before I left the Highlanders, I obviously saw Billy make his debut, this massive unit. It was 16 at school, playing in the back row, like carving up, offloading. I thought, oh, God, I'm in the back
this
row.
This was at Wasps, wasn't
yeah.
it? Did you make your debut at 16?
No. I was still in school, but I think I just turned 18.
Had you? I thought you were younger than that.
No. I don't know.
Well, don't ruin it. I just talked you out. Yeah. Pretend you...
Made his debut at 12.
No, let's not lie. Let's not lie.
Keep going, sorry. Yeah, you went off to the Highlanders because you saw him coming through. And I was on the way out.
I was coming back and I saw Billy and I thought they played Harlequins in Abu Dhabi or something like that. And I came back and I saw him and I met him and I thought, lovely guy. Didn't really talk to me to start with. I think he was trying to size me up. And then we kind of got on really well. And sadly, actually, by the time I came back from my kind of world tour, I've been playing non-stop for sort of 3 years without any breaks. Yeah. Thinking that
like
was a good
Phileas
idea.
Fogg around the world in 40 clubs.
Yeah, exactly. And I was not playing at my best, unfortunately, when I first came back for the kind of first 6 months. And then Bill got a mega, mega deal at Saris and literally just switched his phone off and disappeared. And then, you know...
I just love the fact he's trying to hold a straight face.
Yeah, they took absolute cash and they greased it with a KFC membership for lifetime. For life. And then we kind of built, and then obviously we kind of stayed in contact. And I was kind of sad, really sad to see Billy go because I really enjoyed playing him. I knew what an incredible talent he was. And then we got to spend some time together on tour, rooming, and that's where it really bonded. And we stay in contact over WhatsApp. But
at 2 o'clock in the morning, you were saying before we
started. Yeah, Billy's always like just texting me going, oh, am I looking good at the moment, like what's happening? You got any advice? He doesn't want to say it out in public.
Is he looking good at the moment?
I think, do you know what? I actually said this. Unfortunately, just before he got injured, I thought he looked real sharp. His lid was real tight. I thought he looked good.
Why is lids always coming?
Because when you grow it out, it makes your head look like a Swiss ball. But when you've tightened it up, you look like a little bit thinner through the face. And I thought he was looking great. And then I think tonight he's looking real sharp, actually.
Good.
So the bromance is very strong with Billy and I.
We're looking at a 9 or a 10?
I think a 9 or a 10. For me, you know.
So, because we're now going to ask for the...
No, I agree.
Yeah,
he's actually invited me to his wedding as well.
What wedding?
Your wedding. No. Hey, that's the best bit. So the first time we shared a room together. We were doing some video bits, as you do.
Yeah. As you do, yes.
I do. Firstly, it was really weird because Billy had turned up with a copy of my rugby book and we got him on camera reading that, just taking a few tips. He hated that. But then... it was a bit of a grey area whether he was single or not at the time, and I might have mentioned
it. It was no grey area.
Put out whether he was single, ready to mingle, and I reckon his phone went off, and 30 seconds later, as it went live, a few questions asked. So I'm not allowed to stitch him up because he's fully getting married. So I've mentioned it now.
Yeah.
Has it always been this way, though? Because there was a sort of a thing in the media between the two of you at some point, wasn't there? At the beginning? Or am I making that up? Didn't you have a sort of little contretemps where you weren't?
I think you're making it up. I've never had any drama with
them. I thought it was a sort of a play thing where you were...
The one story I got was when you injured me, I forgot my boots for training for my England debut. And I borrowed your boots and then you tackled me and then I twisted my ankle.
Yeah.
You turned up for England training without your boots?
I know. I was thinking I probably wasn't ready if I didn't have my boots ready for training to make my debut, but... I don't think anyone's ever heard that.
No one's ever told you that. No, we've never said that. No. So Bill borrowed my special correctional boots, which they're over the knee. Which he thought was so he wore over the knee boots.
With braces.
Yeah, full calipers. Actually, Forrest Gump wore something similar.
He did indeed. Run Forrest.
And we did a session, and obviously, when you're like looking to tackle Bill, you know, like he's young, he's going to run over the top of you. So I sort of went to the side to like tackle him low, and as I don't know, because it was really muddy. We kind of stuck in the mud.
It wasn't muddy. Our bridge is like this, mate.
So anyway, I fell on his ankle.
Anyway, he couldn't take me down, and I offloaded the ball. And as I was going to run off, I don't know what it was, but I heard him, like, growling. Like, he sat on my ankle, and I was like, really, ass?
Yeah.
Anyway, he made the bench. I was gone.
Yeah.
Crofty started.
Yeah. He's gone as well. No, but that was unfortunate, yeah. I fell on his ankle and ruined his England date. And the next week you were fine, though, weren't you?
No.
Just as roommates, who makes the beds? Who does the tea? Who wakes up early?
I don't know, we didn't really do that.
Penny Hill, who come in and do that for you? Ring a little silver bell.
Thing is, I don't know if you stopped doing it, but you sleep a lot.
Yeah. No, I still sleep a lot.
Do you?
Yeah, but
it's
like,
good for recovery.
Yeah, it is.
But like, I would never a ridiculous amount of sleep.
Do you like a little midday nap and a...
Yeah. Well, how long is the midday nap? Hour and a half.
No, he. I'm talking about we'll go out for breakfast, do a session, come back, you'll go to sleep, wake up, lunch, eat, sleep, wake up, do a session, come back, sleep, wake up, deep dinner, sleep. No wonder he's so big. Like, obviously, like when you sleep, you release growth hormone and you it's full of recovery. He's the most recovered bloke I've ever met.
This is an hour's show, so if you need a little time out halfway through, we can find you an armchair.
No, it's all right.
Who sleeps more, you or Mako? Because Mako's quite prolific at the Zeds as well.
Yeah, no, we probably do the same.
But Mako kind of walks around in like a snuggle suit. You know, like kids walk around in those like romper suits with the legs attached and
like
the jacket.
A onesie.
Like
onesie?
Yeah, but like a onesie, but padded, like a quilted one.
So you can literally lie down anyway. It's like a mattress on the back.
Yeah. So Bill, like, at least Bill gets up and like looks like he's in action.
Yeah.
Mako will turn up in a quilted suit with the hood up, with a beanie over the top. Someone just like throws food vaguely near his mouth. He like eats it and then he goes back to sleep. Right. Bill at least got up and like had a bit of crack, but...
Busts in.
And also Billy like pretends he doesn't want to be on like... social media doing bits, but he was pretty much on me all the time. I've put him on the video house.
Are you serious, man?
Building a profile. How many followers have you got nowadays?
Oh, I'm not counting. Probably 257,000. No, I've actually got, I think, combined about 800,000, I think.
Combined?
Really? Yeah, Facebook, Instagram. I've got a couple of Instagrams. And maybe a bit more than that, actually.
A couple of Instagrams?
Yeah.
What do you mean, couple of Instagrams?
One for the code one. One for the... Chloe, I don't. I don't have one. Chloe.
Yeah, SIM card.
Chloe, listening to... Yeah.
First impression of Hask?
Funny. Big time.
Funny and big time?
Yeah,
or big time funny?
No, he's funny.
And big time.
And big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's
you
pretty much true.
Deny that, can you?
Oh, I can't. Right.
Are you still big time? You're clinging on to big time.
Probably different.
Not if we're going on salaries.
Yeah. That, weird thing is, it's actually costing me to be here. Because on the car drive down, right, when petrol prices go over a certain limit, it's costing me to be here. That's the weird thing. Same at Saints. Honestly, I've worked it out that when the fuel prices go over something for diesels, my journey to Saints is costing me more than they're paying me. It's an economically difficult situation where you're like that. He's dabbing his forehead, which is extensive, with 50s.
Exactly. He's like blowing his nose on them.
Yeah.
But
I think we were... I'm sort of medium time,
yeah.
I think. I don't ever want to be big time. I just think I maybe had that air, especially for a young player like Bill who likes to tell everyone to keep it humble. Can I just ask something? One of my favourite stories about Mako and Billy was the chicken story with your cousin. Do you remember that Mako put the chicken on? And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. You've got to tell it. Please tell it. It's like makes me crease. It's so good.
This was a few years ago when my little cousin was living with us. My brother put on a whole chicken. My little cousin came in and he was hungry. And instead of eating the breast, he just ate both the legs and the wings. And my brother kicks off and he's like, who the hell ate this? I was like, I don't know. Ask Otty, my little cousin. He's like, did you eat this? He's like, yeah. When you eat any of the breasts, he's like, oh, it's too dry. Michael's like, right, go for a run. And I was laughing and he's like, you, go watch him. I was like, you're right, mate. So I went and followed him around the block in my car. And he's running and crying because obviously he's upset.
Oh my God.
And Billy's running with a car, like shouting at him to keep him running. And Mako's eating the rest of the breast and gone back to sleep. Mako runs a tight ship, mate.
He does. That's quite officious in some ways.
Well, not vicious. That's how we grew up.
So. No, but you were saying that in terms of like the hierarchy thing, he's the boss.
It's cool. I like it.
Do you?
Yeah, because I do it when Mocker's not around.
Right. You get the crown.
Yeah.
Weird thing is, Billy tries to do it with me. He's like, asking me to carry things for him. Like,
are you
serious? What are you doing, mate? I'm like, senior. I'm actually probably seven levels above you.
Yeah.
And he's like,
doesn't say that.
I want him to talk to someone, then for them to talk to me. I don't want him talking to me direct.
Is it ability, not age, in terms of the.
No, it's age.
Right.
The only reason you'd be seven up on me is because you've got a six pack. That's it.
That's all I've got, is it? Yeah, I tell you what, I'm not earning as much cash. No wonder they're playing video games all day. Too honestly, true. Mate, if I was literally... Apparently, right, the only time he gets out off the sofa is he just says this beep, beep, beep. And he looks out and there's a big lorry that just tips a load of cash to the front garden. Being a Mako and they just kick count out.
Snow angels and those kind of things.
Yeah, massive cash.
I was going to talk to you about that. I need one of your trucks to transport it. So
I go to the bank. Well, you're coming to the wrong man, mate. I can fit mine in a tiny small contact case, is it? I've known Billy for years, and he's always been like professional. I mean, he's always been professional until the one time I saw him eat a Domino's pizza with a chicken corner on top.
I told you this story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, let's get this really clear. He got a Domino's pizza, put a chicken corner on top of it, put another Domino's pizza on top of it, smashed that, right, and drank 2 litres of Fanta on it.
1.25 litre of Coke.
Yeah, 1.25 litre of Coke.
No, but it was a slice of pizza. No, not a slice of pizza. Whole pizza and a curry. I don't like wasting food. And right. I knew that if I left it, it'd go to waste. So I was like, oh, I'm going to have to eat this. So I ate all of it.
You did a pizza and a curry and a pizza on top.
No, just one
just,
pizza.
Just the one pizza.
But if you halved it and put it on top, it'd probably look like a sandwich.
It was a sandwich. Most people go to sandwich shops. He made a curry pizza sandwich and then washed it down with 1.5 litres of Coke.
The brilliantly funny Billy Vunipola. You are watching and listening to the House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with our good friends at Guinness. And the first of our best of shows of the summer. Now, this week on TKO, Chris Lloyd and Carl Frampton are in New York, where they're joined by two-weight world champion Heather Hardy ahead of her fight at Madison Square Garden on Saturday night.
The only way that I actually broke onto the scene was I sold a bunch of tickets. I used to tell my promoter, Lou, like, put me on the show, I guarantee you $10,000 in tickets. I will sell you, hand them to me, I'll sell them. And I was making like an $800 purse to do these fights and selling 10, 15 grand in tickets. And I did it all the way up until I went 15-0. And that's kind of what prompted my switch to MMA, because I was 15-0. I was defending my WBC title at the Barclays Center. And I sold $40,000 in tickets, right? That's like over 250 seats I filled for this fight. And they put me on first before the doors even opened. And I was defending my title. I was doing, I think, a 10-round fight. I made under $7,000 and I sold 40 grand in tickets. And I had to make my ring walk with nobody there to clap their hands because they didn't even open the doors yet.
That is Heather Hardy on this week's TKO. Welcome back to House of Rugby with me, Alex Payne, and part one of our best of series. Before the break, we heard about the Haskell Vunipola lovin', but contrary to popular belief, James is a man of the people. There are actually other players who like him.
I want to talk about one guy who, funny if he does get a lot of headlines because he is that good, Ty Furlong. World's best right now. You smile. Is that Lions memories
Lions
coming back?
Friend.
It is, isn't it? Oh, you're still in the group.
Because the group got detonated after the tour. I won't mention who did it, but one boy just went, no, not having that, and blew it up. Cleansed it, forensically cleansed it. I never got to save any of the photos or anything.
Tell us about Ty Furlong, the character, the man, why you smiled, and the player.
Obviously, I'd seen him play before I met him on tour, and we played against him a couple of times, but he was kind of coming through there, or you know, he was established, but he was kind of still building to the myth that he's become, and or legend, I said, not myth, that's a bit rude, legend that he's become. And I remember sharing a room with him on the flight between Australia and New Zealand. We got in late, and I'd not really met him before. He looked at me and he goes, Hass, you're right. I went, yeah. And he went, do you need a hug? And I said, yeah, okay. And we just had this embrace, and he gave me the loveliest hug I've ever had.
Wow.
And it was just one of those moments where, you know, still as a professional rugby player, as a 33-year-old man, you're still sharing rooms with people you haven't met. And it's still an odd case of affairs that you're kind of going to bed like, night, Ty. He's like, night, Hask. Do you want a light on? He's like, no. And you just sort of switch the lights off and go to sleep. But he gave me the loveliest hug, and he was a lovely guy.
Unfortunately, and you won't be surprised, it hasn't actually all been plain sailing with our friends across the water. Despite our strong relationship with Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, Mike Tyndall soured Anglo-Irish relations around the time of the Autumn Internationals.
My issue with Ireland is I'm not sure they'll ever do well at a World Cup with the rugby they play currently.
Okay.
You look at the Six Nations, they could have lost three of their games. I know they didn't, but Scotland should have, in my book, should have beaten them with the three tries they absolutely butchered on two-on-ones.
Johnny Sexton's drop goal.
Yeah.
Johnny Sexton, Hail Mary.
In France. That pass goes a different way in the Wales game. He makes a read. If he gets that wrong, goes over the top. We talk about Stockdale and making that read and what we talk about defenders doing. I actually thought Australia would go really well against them because of how they defend and how easily the Six Nations teams got around the outside of them. I know they make probably the most passes in out of any team in world rugby, but they're all one-out runners. And they just, how many times does the forward score compared to how many times does the back score in terms of it? You know, Stockdale, most of their back strides are intercepts.
Yeah.
So, but in the same
You're doing them down for the number two team in the world.
I mean, I'm doing them down, but then I'm going to say, but what they do, they are outstanding at. The way they break down teams in terms of where they're going to attack, into the inside balls, and the way they then deliver their game plans on a match day and stick to them gets them those results.
Yeah.
But I always believe a team can beat them, which is weird because they don't. Yeah. But they are just great at getting results.
Yes.
Now, do they always play out of their skin? No. but they always get the job done.
For me, Ireland have always been kind of one of the toughest teams I've ever played against. They've ruined the party so many times for us. Twice Grand Slam games they've taken away for us. 2011, yeah. We had that Grand Slam game. Actually, all the lads blamed it on me, the reason we lost, because the night before
the Nick Kennedy game.
It was where we got pumped in the first half. We had we lost the point. Steve Thompson got one try. Do you remember we got that? But the reason was the night before I had a bit of dry skin and my missus at the time gave me some moisturiser and I put it on and she goes, oh, do your whole body. I did my whole body and I realised it was that one that has a tan in it. So I came down, honestly, literally like someone from the Only Ways Essex, glowing. All the lads at the team run when we went for a walk, so we got off the bus. People were in hysterics. And they solely blamed me because I came down. Everyone didn't believe that I hadn't done it on purpose. So I completely upset the equilibrium of the entire team. And then we got humped. And then Steve Thompson was the only one from England to score an intercept try.
Are you aware how much you've upset the Irish?
A little bit, yeah. But I did know that was coming. Because
what's interesting, I put in a good word for you yesterday, actually.
What's interesting is, you obviously upset the Irish, is that normally nobody cares what I say. Everyone goes, oh, shut up. You know, I promise I say the wrong thing here. Everyone will care. Apart from the Kiwis, they won't care unless you're on that stuff.co.uk. Haskell writes us off. I think it'll be a lovely game and hopefully it'll end in a draw.
Everyone's a winner.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Go on. Given what you said a couple of weeks ago, if Ireland do beat the All Blacks, would that change your mind as Ireland head to the World Cup?
No, it won't. It won't change my mind.
I'm giving you a chance.
He is not taking it. It won't change my mind on what I believe where they are now. What I would add to what I said 2 weeks ago, which is basically I don't think they can win a World Cup playing the way they play at the moment.
Okay.
Now, what they are getting done is getting wins, but under Smith, they have developed so much. So I'm not saying that in a year they can't develop. So let's say I think they did 400 passes on the weekend. How many of them were just straight to forwards with two men either side of him and they run into a brick wall? Why did Argentina have a lot of success? Because they stopped them on the gain line.
Yeah.
Now, Argentina made 9 line breaks to their 1 or something, or 2. I think there's more to it, but I'm not saying that Ireland can't develop that. But at the moment, they're relying heavily on their forwards to do a job, who are doing an amazing job, and they're probably, I would probably say, the form pack in the world.
Yeah.
I just think they need to add a few more strings.
If Ireland do win the World Cup, you will be the front page of every newspaper.
But genuinely, I would be happy if they won the World Cup, if they played a little bit of rugby. I hope to be proved wrong, but I just think they need...
You're waiting to be proved wrong.
Yeah, I'm waiting to be proved. They just need a little bit more. If New Zealand get 9 line breaks against them, they will convert most of them, because that's what they do.
I think it's fair to say he's doubled... rather than quit. Yeah, but I
will say that I think wait a minute, you have an opinion. You have an opinion. You might just not be on your own podcast anymore, but you have an opinion.
See yourself out.
Remember, Joey's an Irish company, I think, originally. Yes, so
we'll be back next week.
Whether Tins will be allowed back into Ireland remains to be seen, but travel has never stopped the Hask. In fact, given his experiences of playing abroad, it turns out he's quite a cultured chap. Starting off in France.
When we went over there, we were outside for training once, and Ollie and I were warming up, and I was looking at the clock, and there was kind of 10 minutes to go before the training started. I thought, where is everybody? And I saw two of the French lads come out with a pasting table and 2 shopping bags, and they walked out and put the pasting table out, put the tablecloth out, and Ollie and I are looking, well, what is going on? 2 bottles of red wine go down, a baguette goes down, some saucissons of foie gras, okay. All the lads come out, a few of them put the cigarettes out, a few of them finish their espressos, and they shouted over, oi, roast beef, which I assume meant us. I thought it was a term
good,
of endearment.
Good assumption, yeah.
I thought it was a term of endearment, turned out it wasn't. They went over and they said, oh, listen, we're having a little petit degustation. And I said, what do you mean? I said, what, training now? And he said, oh, well, actually, someone's brought some treats in and we want to share them. So we each got handed a plastic cup of red wine, a bit of French bread with some foie gras and some saucisse on it, eat that, net the wine, boom, straight out to training. 5 minutes later. It was incredible.
I just very quickly want to ask you about Japan.
Mm.
Tell us, sell us, what are we going to get from them? And what is the rugby culture like?
Bigger than you could have imagined.
Is it really?
Yeah, and I think obviously when Japan beat South Africa, it kind of went up a notch. When I went over there, obviously we didn't know a lot about the rugby. I knew that obviously all the big companies had teams. So I played for Ricoh, Toshiba, Canon had teams. And when I signed for Ricoh, my contract was to become an employee of Ricoh. And I actually had to check to make sure that if I didn't get picked, I wasn't assembling photocopiers. Because I had a few concerns about that. But actually, and I also thought my physical stature was going to really help me. It didn't. I imagine like smashing people out of the way. But No, it didn't happen. Every team was obviously really well drilled. The university sport over there, rugby, is huge. You get 60,000 people to the big games, more so than the actual top league games a lot of the time. You know, incredible kind of tacklers, really well disciplined. Every team's kind of got 12 professionals and the rest are employed by the company. So they're all head down in suits the next morning, then they're coming from suits into training. I think they'll be unbelievably welcoming. I think Japan is an incredibly beautiful place, culturally amazing. And I was only there for kind of 5 months. I tried to absorb as much as I
Do you speak any of the language?
No. It is the hardest language. I mean, I'm not sharp as tall in the box, but it is the hardest language. We did a lesson, and I was like, literally, I don't know what you're talking about, because there's two alphabets or something like that as well. Yeah. And there's obviously the written kind of text and also the picture text. Yeah, it was no...
You'd be good at the picture text, wouldn't you?
No.
But it was, train, cat, dog.
Colouring things in. I think, actually, when the World Cup goes over there, I think there'll be unbelievable hosts. I think people will have a lifetime-changing experience going over there. What I did find funny, though, was the organised cheering. There wasn't a lot of spontaneity. So for Rico, you know,
polite applause.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know, twicking them off, you know, bravo, bravo. Mm. Not a lot of people, you know, when you go to Premiership games, a little bit more singing, or go to the Chiefs, they got that kind of thing going, or wherever
Tomahawk
else.
Tomahawk chop.
Tomahawk chop. Over there, we had a guy dressed as a dragon leading the cheering, and he would, when he started cheering, they'd all start cheering. And it was all like organised. They had songs and everything, and everyone would be there as a collective. And the fans were fantastic. They'd have, they'd give you little pictures they'd drawn and photographs of you. It was one of the best eye-opening experiences I've ever had. Hard doing it on your own. I was on my own.
Where did you live? How do you pass the time?
I lived in a little place called Futakatamagawa, which I'm assured by Rico and actually by Eddie Jones that it's the most expensive real estate in the whole of Tokyo. It's kind of this kind of next to a river, beautiful little houses and villages. But I had a little pink house. It's on YouTube somewhere. Yeah, I did a little pink house. I lived next door to Tamati Ellison, who became good. And he actually was the Highlanders with me. It was kind of perfect. I went there with him and then went to the Highlanders. Yeah, I mean, I remember Boxing Day was interesting because they don't celebrate Christmas, so all the Islanders invited me over.
You'll go to McDonald's, don't you?
They don't even worry about it. We played on Christmas Day, got on the bus on the way, or the train on the way back, and then on Boxing Day, I was sitting in the garden with lads roasting a pig on a spit. Different kind of Christmas, but it was cool.
Great days. I'm looking forward to your World Cup tour. If you don't make the cut, you can...
Gulliver's. Other tours are available, but yeah.
And if France and Japan weren't enough, here he is on his time in New Zealand.
I basically had a chat with a few different people over there.
Yeah.
And my dream team that I always wanted to go to was the Crusaders. Really? They were a team that I supported, but it didn't work out. I think Daryl Gibson was in charge then. I had a chat, but I went to the Highlanders, which is obviously equally, you know, amazing team to be part of. And I was there when Aaron Smith was just making, you know, he'd made his New Zealand debut.
Taught him a thing or two.
taught him all the best bits. I actually taught him not how to get caught, but I didn't listen to that lesson.
No.
And Ben Smith, you know, I was lucky enough to be involved with those guys there, and I had Tamati Ellison and Jose Gear and a few of those guys in the mix. So it was incredible for me to play there. Again, I went over there nervous because I'd obviously seen all the highlight reels like everybody does on Sky, and, you know, thought, oh my God, my chip and chase is not the best and my out the back door passing is not the best. What's it going to be like? And actually it was eye-opening just because of the way they approach the training, how everyone in New Zealand wants to be a rugby player.
Yeah.
And that's something that we don't have here. I think if we were footballers and we were doing a football show, everybody in the UK wants to play football, wants to be a professional footballer. In there, it's completely flipped. You know, the whole country is designed for rugby. Everybody loves it and every player aspires to do it. And our kind of thing over here is, first thing is to pick up a weight or take a selfie. Theirs is to pick up a rugby ball and play touch. You know, their lower league club rugby.
Yeah.
Like, I came all the way through the age groups from sort of 5 to 18 at Maidenhead Rugby Club. If I wasn't playing for Saints, I'd go back and play for Maidenhead and it would be as intense. And if someone from another team wasn't in the Super 15, they'd be playing me.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of stuff. They just can't get enough of it. And I think there's a real good link between the clubs and the country and how all that works, and how all the S&C works. And I think they're impressive. But again, I found that rugby's rugby wherever you go. It was just some of the specifics. And I think that natural athlete ability and the very fact you're getting the best filtered down.
Yeah. Where did you live? Who did you live with?
I lived on my own.
Did you?
I lived in...
On your own, in Dunedin?
Yes.
Wowzers.
Yeah, but everyone says that. I think people have this kind of misnomer about me that I'm a bit of a party person or that I'm going to, like, die if I wasn't in London.
Right.
I would just mind my own business. I joined the local boxing gym, New Zealand Fight and Fitness over there.
Did you?
And I just do boxing, jiu-jitsu, drink a lot of coffee. It was quite sad in the evenings because I can cook, but after a while I got bored. And there's two cafes in...
St. Clair, where I was, right on the beach, salt and starfish, they're called. And I would go and eat there. A lot of tables for one, please. And just
with a book, papers?
With a book or a laptop and just watch a movie while I'd eat my food, then go back.
Didn't learn a lot then with the boxing?
Wait, watch out. Ooh, you haven't seen these heavy
hands. I say this, I saw the clip.
Which clip was this?
You got banned when you're in New Zealand.
Oh yeah, no, that's the problem. That's the best bit. So I got banned. Every week I'd be doing the fighting is extra conditioning. In a game, a bloke grabbed me by the bollocks, right, and wouldn't let me go. And I threw a right, missed. Then I threw another right and a left hook because I'd be working the combination.
Oh, nice.
And after the game, Bobby Skinsdale was commentating, and he said to me, "It was nice combination." And I went, "What do you mean? I only threw one punch." He went, "No, nice combination." And I looked back at the video, only recalled throwing one punch. And I literally gone, boom, boom, bang. And that was it. It got me and I got five whip man.
The left was good.
It was a 14-week season.
Yeah, not ideal.
Did you love it?
I loved it. I loved it.
Did you love it because you learned or because the experience was amazing?
The experience was amazing. The variety of rugby. So when you played against the other New Zealand sides, it was fast and they were powerful, but it wasn't like insanely physical.
Yeah.
Australian sides were physical, but not slightly less than the New Zealand teams and were quite organised, quite set. You know, they had three or four moves ahead, quite structured. And the South Africans were like playing a test match. It was a phase where they used to have a guy that would stand next to breakdown, waiting for the ball, and the other bloke would hold him by the back of the shorts and the collar, and they used to just ram you into contact. And after those games, it was horrific. It was literally like playing, like I imagine the boys are feeling this week, playing South Africa. So it was interesting, that kind of different variety. And I thought culturally it was really interesting, the fact that you got to go on tour, got to stay in, you know, Australia for a couple of weeks, go to South Africa for 2 weeks, play those kind of big games. The very fact that there was no relegation, so you kind of played, you had a system, you played it irregardless of what was happening. Whereas in this country, you start a pre-season, everyone wants to play flamboyant rugby.
Yeah.
You get into kind of winter, the pitches get worse, the weather goes bad, you're suddenly looking over your shoulder and you have to play a certain type of rugby to win those games. Whereas over there, the pitches and surfaces were better. We basically played indoors.
Yeah.
And you got consistent higher level rugby. And I absolutely loved it. And I really wanted to go back. When my contract was up a little while ago, I mulled over trying to go back and do it again. But it just didn't work out.
No. Very quickly, touring with the Lions last year, how was that relative to living there?
Great. It's such a unique place, New Zealand. I really like it. I think for me, I mean, we talked about it before, that tour was amazing just in terms of getting to mix with all the players from the other teams that you spend so much time fighting with on the field in the best possible way and spending no time with them. When we were sort of, you know, first started playing, you'd least get to see the guys over in the bar afterwards. Now, the game finishes, you're into the next week, you're analysing, you're done by Sunday night, it's wham bam, thank you ma'am, and it's so commercialised.
Yeah.
Over there on tour, I got to spend all the time with the boys, and over in New Zealand, after every game, the opposition would come into the change room and you'd have a beer. That was the best bit for me. And it was quite nice because I got to meet people that I hadn't met before, like Sonny Bill Williams and stuff you'd seen. And were like, oh my God, that guy's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you want some, Sonny?
Would you back yourself in the ring against Sonny Bill?
You've always got to back yourself. Whether I get absolutely battered is neither here nor there, but I'd have to have a good go. He's so good. Anyway, but he really irritates me because he's good looking, unbelievable skills, won everything, and he's got big guns.
He's massive, isn't he? He's one of those blokes you're going, wow.
I wanted to ask you, when you were down there, did you learn the haka?
Sadly, no.
Really?
I'll tell you a little thing about the haka. So when I first... When I was younger, I obviously I worked a lot with a sports psychologist about preparing for games, because when I was at WASS, I was quite blessed. It was super professional. Mm. You know, we were the first ones into like sports, nutrition, weight, all this kind of stuff. And we had a real dedicated plan pre-match. But obviously sometimes when you're a player, you might have personal issues, you might be feeling tired, which puts you off your game. So what I wanted to do with her was find a method of, as soon as I put my music on pre-game, I was in the zone. Doesn't matter what had happened in the day, that's what I was going to do. And I'd have a little set of notes, and we worked on it for a long time. And it actually helped me, because when I went to Paris and we had a kickoff at 7 o'clock at night for a home game, they're making you stay in a hotel down the road from your house and waking you up at 7 in the morning to do some bloody walkthrough. And then you sit all day in a cafe with the lads until kickoff for like however many hours, just because they couldn't trust that the guy's going to eat the proper food and all this kind of stuff. Or when I woke up on Christmas Day in Japan and having to play a game and no one's celebrating Christmas, and you've kind of got...
You played on Christmas
Day in Japan. You've got like miso soup for breakfast and a bit of rice and everything else. And you're like, I was tackling some guy from Panasonic, a South African guy. And he's like, "Happy Christmas." I was like, "Hello, mate." You're like, you know what I mean? And then obviously...
Jingle bells?
Yeah.
In the breakdown?
No, but but on the way back, on the train, it was, you know, we're all celebrating Christmas, all the foreigners. And the Japanese are like, boom, head down. So if I didn't have those things, you woke up on Christmas Day, you're going, this is the last place on earth I want to be. But as soon as I put the tunes on, I was sweet.
Go to work.
But I used to have the haka on my iPod when I was younger. Because I used to listen to it, and it was like a recording from something. And obviously, it just used to be the unbelievable motivator. So the hairs just go back up on the back of your arms.
Yeah.
So when I first faced it, it was the biggest motivator ever. I was like, I want to hoe into these guys. Like, I want to get involved. Then I went to New Zealand, met them all, became quite good friends with Ma and Nonu, who I was with in Japan, saw them do it. I found it the funniest thing in the world. I was like in hysterics. When the last time I played them, I'm like this. Because you realise that just like the lads you know dancing, doing all these faces, and you're like, it's ridiculous. It completely ruined it for me.
But
now I've had a break. If I was to face it again, probably never, but if I was ever to do that again, I think it would be a motivator again. But it completely lost the magic for that one period. Because I remember Arlie Williams used to do it, and he used to have that terrible kind of mohawk and stick his tongue out, and everyone would go mad. And everyone goes, ooh, what's it like to face the hacker? That's the one question that anyone who knows nothing about rugby goes, I know that team, the ones who wear the black, what you mean, the All Blacks? Dance. Yeah, they do the dance thing, the hacker. That must be the scariest thing. You're like, but I'm a fully grown man, I'm a professional rugby player. Like, that scares me, I'm in the wrong job. It used to motivate, then it became funny. Obviously, with no disrespect meant, but it is essentially lads dancing around. If you see the old videos, what it's like. And now I think it's gone back to respect. But I used to use it as a motivator. I used to have it on my iPod. I do think it's a bit unfair, because the only thing we've got is like the Morris dance or something like, do you know what I mean?
Bells and stock.
Something like that, flapping.
Get the baguettes out, start whacking each other.
It is quite cool. I see it when, I love it when like the All Blacks play the Samoans or the Tongans or the Fijians.
Oh, yeah, when they go together.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. When I feel like we're just like, arms up and everyone's looking at you, just kind of want to...
You can waste a good 20, 30 minutes on YouTube.
It's the school's
hackers.
Ones. Oh my God, the whole school comes out.
But I'll tell you one thing about the New Zealand tour, when we went before there in 2011, is they always say, with All Blacks and the Maoris and us, they always say, oh, so good to have you in the country. We want to do a hacker to welcome you. We're so happy to have you. And as everyone's going, like pretending to stab you, like, I'm pretty sure...
This
everywhere
welcome.
We go, everyone's offering out to kill us or murder us. They're like, no, it's welcome you. Like, not really.
Not entirely sure.
While welcome you, we're going, hello, mate. Bloody lovely to see you. Fancy a beer. They're literally like...
slitting throats.
And we got it everywhere we went. Even school kids are like sticking their tongues at you, like, pretty much sure you want to fight me.
Best hacker of all time?
The Rugby League, it was New Zealand against Samoa. You mentioned when they go at each other. They turn the volume up in the stadium. You've never seen anything like it. That's one of those YouTube videos you're watching. It's tingling. It's incredible. The thing that was a little bit awkward was the old nose gestures when you get
there. Hongi.
The hongi, yeah. I've really disrespected it by saying the nose gestures.
The nose gestures.
You've got shattered Maori culture.
Exactly. Get a little bit too close, so it can be awkward.
Yeah.
Do you remember when, was it Brian Moore?
This had better be good.
Was it Brian Moore?
Norm Hewitt.
Who walked up.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to do that today. Like, I'm interested about this. So Brian Moore.
No, it was Richard Cockerell.
Richard
Cockerell. Norm Hewitt in 97.
Right, so Richard Cockerell, right? So a lot of these guys are like quite opinionated about this stuff, about what we would do. You know, I remember like, Neil Back got upset about what I did with my selfie stick. I'm thinking, he walks up and does the thing, stares it down. Mm. Did he like pre-plan that? Because imagine I just did that. The lads are there and I went, right, I've had enough of this. I just walked off and like squared up to the whole Kiwi team on my own.
Jesus.
Yeah, but in those days, you see, now they have to do it on the 10-metre line.
Yeah.
But in those days, you literally both lined up on the halfway. So Willie Anderson was the other guy who in Ireland led the team. Actually, the best hacker is the World Cup final in 2011 when the French did the arrowhead towards them.
That was good. The other one was really awkward. Again, the French. I didn't know this, but you have to accept the challenge. So you have to walk backwards rather than walk forwards. They didn't do it. It was a standoff. So it was the New Zealand under 20s against the French under 20s. 4 minutes 35, dead air. As they're just staring at each other, they're going, this is just ridiculous.
Commentators are like, Wales. Wales did it.
Yeah.
With Ryan Jones.
Yeah, I remember that. Those things are good, but everyone always overthinks it. Like, what do you do? But I was just thinking about that thing with Richard Cockerell. Like, did he vet that? And what did the lad say to him? Like, Cockers, what are you doing, mate? That's insane. Because imagine I did that now. Like, Owen and Dills were like, you're a dickhead.
Like,
that would be a nightmare. I remember, wasn't it Clive Webber, one of them on that Lions tour 2005? The England team to sing a song back.
No, he wrote it. It was called The Power of Four, was the anthem for the Lions. But then they lined up in a semicircle with Dwayne Peel and Brian O'Driscoll, and O'Driscoll threw grass in the air. And it was meant to be a sign of respect. So they'd actually asked the Maori elders, how can we sort of accept the challenge and show that we respect it? They threw grass in the air, and I think the All Blacks thought it was offensive. And 2 minutes later, O'Driscoll was off on a stretcher with his shoulder.
And they were absolutely battered. So I think just don't overthink it.
Although he's worked hard on his image during the first season of House of Rugby, there are just one or two things Hask cannot escape.
Where did Brant Haskell come from? Because it was a thing for a while.
No, it was never a thing.
It was a thing.
A disgruntled... Well, it wasn't intentionally supposed to be a thing. A disgruntled ex-coach of mine got the hump because I didn't sign for the club and told everyone that I was much more interested in being a brand than I was playing. And then a few rugby pundits ran with it and it's just followed me around ever since. It does not exist. Right. I've never referred to myself as the brand.
Stuart Lancaster is another man who's had a phenomenal amount of credit. And in fact, in the immediate moments after winning the title last season, Johnny Sexton was paying credit to Lancaster. I'm interested in your relationship with him because off the back of the World Cup in 2015, correct me if I'm wrong, you said, James, that you were his dirty little secret. Where does that leave your relationship? Is that right? Am I right? And B, what is your relationship with him like these days?
This is a good way to start.
We're putting you on the spot. Yeah, you're going to have to come armed next week.
It's not a problem. I can deal with anything you've got to give.
Nothing sticks.
You know, for me, I always had a good relationship with Stuart. I actually, you know, I really rated him as a coach, you know, even before we got the England job in terms of the sacks and stuff. You know, we'd always had a good relationship. I hadn't had too much to do with him in terms of actually playing under him. And then when he came into England, obviously his passion, his focus for the job was incredible. I think the reason he's been so successful at Leinster is that it's a great baptism of fire being involved with England. I think it teaches you a lot about your coaching style, about you as an individual and how you do things. It's not just a job about coaching. That's what everyone finds when you come into England, especially what Stuart did. You know, his attention to detail, he was so task focused. He was worried about the bottom right to the top, controlling everything. I think at Leinster he's gone back to doing what he does best, which is coaching. Pressure's off in terms of the English media. He's able to do what he does. And I think you learn a lot of lessons. You know, I think my opinion of Stuart was that I always got on very well with him. We always had mutual respect for each other. Well, hopefully, I did my side. And I said, dirty little secret, I just meant that he was very much about a certain mould of a player in my mind. But then I would then be expected to do little entertainment bits here and there and bring that kind of thing that I do, whatever that is. And then that's what I meant. You know, it was kind of like, oh, God, we don't really want him front of house because he's a bit of a nightmare. But actually, please, could you amuse the lads when required? That's what I meant by that. I didn't mean that he treated me badly or anything else like that.
House of Rugby has certainly helped his social media profile, as people have seen James in a different light. However, when he went viral last year, it had nothing to do with us and more to do with a bizarre performance on Sky Sports. For those of you who missed it, let's all have a shing-shong.
Right, let's just clear this up. Because I've got so much to say, and I was actually going to bring some notes in about this one particular subject.
You haven't quite managed that.
Forget the rugby. I was going to bring the notes in, but obviously things didn't go quite according to plan post-match. I want to just say here and now, I was not drunk in any way, shape or form post-game. And let's all have a sing-song is all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare. How bad's that?
Do you want to try and explain what happened? Or do you want others of us to try and explain what happened?
You can fill it in. I just want to say that, obviously, I've done like lots of TV bits and pieces before. I've had talk back in my ears. I've had all that kind of stuff going on. And when I started speaking after you asked me that question, I could hear in my head that things weren't going right. And I've listened to and watched a lot of episodes of House, you know, the TV series. And there's lots of things in where people have problems with their brains where they're thinking clearly, but their mouth isn't working.
Yeah.
And halfway through that, I could hear myself sounding like you all listened to. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm actually having a stroke or I'm having a meltdown here live on TV. And I couldn't correct it. And I, honestly, the words are coming out of my mouth normally, but it just went complete gobbledygook. Yeah.
For any of you who are watching or listening who perhaps don't know what we're talking about, literally pop James Haskell into Twitter and you'll have about 15,000 opportunities to watch it. I had a quick look before we came and did this. I reckon you're over a million views, which in 24, 36 hours isn't bad.
Yeah.
For someone who is the self-appointed Archbishop of Banterbury, the King of Chat, Brand Haskell, I mean,
so
what has this done to Brand Haskell?
First of all, that doesn't exist. We've told you about that.
Well, we're bringing it back. We're fluffing it every week.
Okay, listen, there's been a few balls-ups with it. The worst bit of it all is the people who actually genuinely thought I was drunk.
Yeah.
The second worst...
Easy mistake to make.
I think it was more like I was having a stroke. I know that's not a laughing matter, but it was more like I was having that one of them than anything else. The other side to it is I'm already getting people messaging me going, mate, have you seen this? Yes, you dickhead. I'm the one in the video. And the second thing I've had in there is, oh, have a sing song, mate. That's constantly being replied to me. Yeah. I'm like, lads, you're not original. It's been 5 seconds since someone said that to me.
We could have some merchandise made up.
We
could go to town.
We should get T-shirts. Like, I've got my Alan Partridge T-shirt on this evening. I reckon James Haskell just talking bollocks could be the next T-shirt.
But how would you get the slogan in there at the end about just getting her?
You just have a speech for going, stop a thing song. Yeah. That would be the best bit.
You put out a sort of statement from your bed quite late at night, the video. I mean, it's obviously been troubling you a bit, or are you just happy to park it and move on? I can hear Chloe giggling in the background.
Yeah. Okay, so this is how I approached it. So when it happened, I didn't know that that's how I'd sounded. I thought it was just in my headphones.
Yeah.
I thought because Will Greenwood had complained about a thing, and he hadn't moved. This is the best bit.
He didn't do a lot to save you, to be fair.
I was talking absolute crapola live on TV, and Will didn't bat an eyelid. He didn't even say,
Hask, are you okay?
Yeah.
But anyway, so we moved
somebody
on.
Somebody did bail you out there, didn't they?
Yeah, you bailed me out, which is nice.
Yeah.
But then the best bit was that I then didn't realise how bad it was. As I was getting home, I was like, on my phone, and my Twitter and Instagram were going. I was looking at it, I was like, oh God, everyone's going, oh, you've had a drink, mate. You've had a couple of pints at half time, have you, mate? And I was thinking, okay, this is kind of slightly amusing, but probably want to deal with this. So I got home and I said to Chloe, look, what should I do? Because this is going to go bad. And then she was like, watch it. And then we started laughing at it so much. I was like in hysterics, like off the side of my bed, like in tears.
Yeah.
Then I got Joe Marler messaged me going, are you all right? Yeah. And I was like,
caring.
Yeah, very caring. We kind of went through it and I decided, look, I'll release something just to be clear because you, unfortunately, in the world we live in now, you have to spell it out because there is a kind of a mid level, div level of people who operate. You just think everything they read and see is true. Yeah. So I tried to laugh it off. And I have found it hysterical apart from today, where it's got a little bit naughty, where still people are getting a bit nasty. And I have got feelings. I am human.
Yeah.
It's just the gift that keeps on giving. I think I'm up to about 50 or 60 watches now each time. It's just hilarious.
It's one of those things you want to kind of keep it on your phone for if you're having a bad day.
I'm always happy to laugh at myself, and I like to be self-deprecating. And as I said, I went through a different phase of it where I went almost full circle, where I was a bit pissed off, found it unbelievably funny, reposted it myself. Obviously, get the views, right? You know? And then I've gone now full circle where I'm like, I can't believe people thought it was I was genuinely drunk. Or I've been tranquilized.
Yeah.
Someone messaged me going, you've done a load of MDMA? I was like, not really.
You've got a dart in your neck.
This is the best.
That's the best one.
From old school.
Very good.
I goes, you're crazy, man. You're crazy, but I like you.
So it's time for our perfect pour, together with Guinness, our weekly test in 119 and a half seconds, because that's how long it takes to pour the perfect pint. In the early weeks of the show, James proved how bad he was at his specialist subjects. Farm Machinery, Harry Potter and Sherlock Holmes were an unmitigated disaster. So how would he fare on a subject a little closer to home? Away we go then, with Haskell on Haskell.
You once said, I've got big arms. I joke about selling two tickets to the gun show. True or false?
False.
True.
What?
And we've got the evidence to prove it.
Made that up. Yeah.
You listened to Walking in Memphis before a game of rugby. True or false?
True.
Why?
In the early days of my playlist, it was a very emotive song back in the day.
At school, you were in the school spelling club.
False.
Which club were you in?
Chess club.
Were you good?
One game, one victory, and they said it was because I threatened to kill the kid, but I didn't. I beat him because I got all the nerds in
Gary
my house.
Gary Kasparov could learn a thing or two about
it. I got all the nerds in my house to teach me a special manoeuvre, and I did it to this kid, and he just folded up like a deck chair.
Right. Savage. True or false, you're obsessed with Starsky and Hutch?
False.
Who are you obsessed with in terms of TV characters?
Well, Alan Partridge, Ricky Gervais.
The answer here is Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yeah, Sherlock Holmes, yeah, and what Poirot. I love that. I listened to 75 hours of Sherlock Holmes, and then I found that Stephen Fry did the Sherlock Holmes, and I re-listened to it with him, 75 hours.
Your middle name is Wellborn.
Yeah, it's very chintzy. It's a bit like mock Tudor cladding. Or
Do you only wear red cords?
Yeah, like raw miniatures, you know what I mean? Like. Yeah,
that's
very chintzy.
That's where you meet his dad and you realise where Wellborn is.
Yeah, yeah. Where it's gone, he's got it from a market going, Susie, it's unbelievable. We've got Wellborn in our name, we're double barreled, we're going to make it. That's why. That's what it's come about.
Any interesting middle names?
No.
Cuthbert Dibble Syndrome Smile.
You used to eat 5 rotisserie chickens a day.
No, it's false.
How many was it?
3.
Everyone knows you as a joker, life and soul of the party, but you recently claimed you were a loner. True or false?
True.
Is that self-appointed or just ostracised?
A bit of both, actually. I say this
about
myself.
You're a very sensitive soul.
Are you?
In there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Mike's known me since the early days.
There's a lot of bravado to cover over the top of it.
No, but also remember that when we're one-on-one, the sensible comes out. If there's any sort of crowd, then I enjoy the performance thing. That's why roommates always hate being with me. So I remember Simon Shaw sat on the end of the bed and went, go on then. Right. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, entertain me. That's why I got to share a room with you. And I was like, Simon, I'm just minding my business here. And I went back to doing work.
Work?
I work a lot. I'm a workaholic, genuine.
Are you?
Yeah.
Always making notes on everything in life.
Well, yeah, not like an artiste, not sort of reflecting.
No, not that. But
the sun dappled that tree in a lovely way. Yeah.
But don't you make?
I make a lot of notes. Yeah, and this, for example, to and from here it takes 2 hours. I do all my emails. I'm writing another book. I'm doing a few bits and pieces, editing all sorts.
We're so out of time, but we're going to keep going because this is quite interesting. Yeah. On to word association. It's a family game. You can join in. Actually, didn't see it. Brexit.
Balls up.
Get out.
Raw horse. This is actually for you, Hask, specifically. Mm. Word association. Raw horse.
Delicious.
Yeah, good meal. I was going to say that.
I ordered it in Japan. I thought it was steak tartare, and they served up raw horse, and I ate it, and it was incredibly
really
lovely.
trot on, you'd be probably find that a bit upsetting, wouldn't you, with your background?
No, not some horses are bred.
Mate, the country gents, they whiz a horse or a wood chipper and just have a horse down in their place. What's for dinner? Yeah.
Are you still in the horses? Would you got anything at the moment?
We've got a little syndicate that buys flats as weanlings and sells them as yearlings.
Anything that's going to...
Out in Australia. We sell them in Australia.
Weanlings, wumlings, and
flats. Anything that's going to come through in the same
no,
way?
No, not at the moment.
Neil Back, Word Association.
Lovely chap.
I would go lies on that, but interesting.
Lovely bloke, yeah.
Intense.
Your nickname. We were talking about this earlier. Your nickname. Apparently either The Machine or .com.
Oh, yeah. So .com was an early one, and that was because, unbeknownst to myself, my dad had set up a website.
As part of Brand Haskell?
Doesn't exist.
But there was brandhaskell.com.
No, so what happened was I was doing some stuff for some sponsors. My dad got creative and thought it'd be a good idea to have a website to be able to showcase some bits and pieces.
And you wonder where Brand Haskell came from.
And the problem was that I hadn't really ever done anything yet, and it just went down like a shitstorm, and all the lads at WASP found out about it. And there was a part where you could contact me. I would say I was getting 50 emails a day from Warren Gatland. We hate you. You are shit. Right, from Sean Edwards. You're the worst player I've ever seen. And just lads going, I'm going to kill you. Like, it was horrific.
His dad has a lot to answer for.
Yeah, and I was like, Dad, please take it down. They're pulling me. Peter Scrivener at the time thought he was going to come into the change room and find me hanging from the rafters. They got bad. I got that abused. So then everyone started calling me .com. And then what was the other one?
The Machine.
Oh, that was in France, at Stade Francais, because in France, like doing extras after training, it's like a dirty word. It's like a factory in France. When the thing goes, they all literally down tools and off. So I was doing like extra fitness and tackling. They were like, ah, always more, La Machine.
Richard and Judy.
Love them.
Royal Weddings. Love them.
Fun.
So that's it for our first Best Of show. We'll be back next week with plenty of Ben Ryan, Mrs. Haskell, Mike Tyndall's nemesis, and that remarkable Christmas episode. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Please do leave us a review, and we'll chat to you next week.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.